o'clock, and I would like to call the regular council meeting of the Region of Queens Municipality Tuesday, September 13th, to order. Before we proceed with our agenda, I would like to ask that we stand and provide 70 seconds of silence to the late Queen Elizabeth II to represent her 70 years of reign. Thank you, and I ask you to be seated. So we have one addition to the agenda, 7.7 MSFM conference. Were there any other additions council wishes to make? Hearing none, I'll ask for approval of the agenda. Moved by Councillor Charlton, seconded by Councillor Brown. All those in favor? First up is the Queens Historical Society Loftus C Memorial, and I know all members of council have received this document, and we are looking forward to this presentation that's represented years of work. So, David Dagley, I assume you are presenting this, and
Don Smith. Thank you, Mayor Norman and councilors, for allowing us to present today. We have the Queens County Historical Society Loftus Monument Project that we're going to talk about this morning. As chair of the Queens County Loftus C Committee, I am pleased to be here with committee member Don Smith. We are very privileged to have access to his expertise. And we will be presenting the PowerPoint. This will be in addition to the detailed information which was previously provided to Mayor and Council. Members of our committee are also here today in our entirety. We would be pleased to answer your questions at the end of your presentation. Don?
Thank you, David. Mayor Norman, councilors, Chris, great to be here today to make this presentation. There's been a lot of work done by the committee in the past 6 months, I guess. And we've gone through a lot of work to get the presentation to this point where we feel comfortable coming presented to you and sharing our ideas on the monument and specifically on our suggestions for a location. We want to move ahead with this onto a fundraising program, but the very first question going to be asked is, where is this going to go? So we thought we should deal with that issue first. sorry, I'm back on Tosh, go ahead, this is a PC.
Eric Wolf.
Oh, that's wonderful, thank you. Well, look at that. Sorry for that delay, we're off the. Members of our committee are, David Dagley, who's the chair of our committee, A. Freeman, who is the president of the Queens County Historical Society, Owen Hamlin, who is the chair of the Board of Trustees of the Queens County Museum, Leslie Scott, who is the vice chair of the Board of Trustees, and provides digital support for our record of loss at sea, Linda Rayfuse, the executive director of the Queens County Museum, and myself, Don Smith, who is a member of the Board of Trustees of the museum, and the project planner and designer of the monument. When I first heard about this monument being planned, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to volunteer my experience in putting this together and helping to move this along with the committee. So we've done a lot of work. Everybody in the committee has been doing a lot of work on this. In terms of reference, criteria for a formal terms of reference was developed in 2011. These were further updated in 2022. Names were included in the database, which David has been building for 12 years now. Sailors and fishermen associated with vessels lost at sea. Vessel-related deaths will act dockside. Queens County residents lost as passengers on vessels. Members of Canaan's Armed Forces lost at active service, either in war or peacetime. Freshwater deaths and deaths at place of residence have been excluded. Residents of Queens County, which would be those born in Queens County, those who moved to Queens County became residents. Those lost at sea while away working during periods of employment, privateer crew members from Queens County, residents lost at sea in foreign ports due to illness, members of all armed forces lost at sea while on active duty. The project will cover the period from 1759 up to today, the most recent information that we have. There will be an interpretive panel with the monument, not unlike the interpretive panels that are down at Fort Point at this point in time, and also around the community. Be a large panel containing a QR code which will be situated in front of the monument. This will allow visitors to access the Lost at Sea database, which will contain the accepted names. Now, when we developed this concept, we took a look around what was in other parts of the province in terms of memorials of this type, and they all seem to be marble slabs with names. And we felt that we needed to have more of an image, create more of a concept that would relate to those lost at sea, 80% of whom are fishermen, fish-related, and so this is where we took our concept. The database, depending on the availability of information, which David and the crew have been able to pull together, the database will include in alphabetical order names of individuals, the individual's date of birth, community of birth, community of residence at the time of death, name of the vessel they were lost on, the date lost at sea, names of loss, location of loss, sorry, names of parents, names of spouses, place and date of marriage, children, etc. Anything relevant to help build a story around each individual. The master list of names would be a computerized master list of all the names to be created, headings to include accepted, unqualified, or not determined through the work that David and the committee have been doing. Museum website and Facebook page will be created to assist with acquiring additional information. As you know, as these things go ahead, there's people always come out of the woodwork, so to speak, with more information. So we're open to have that done. This will assist in determining qualifications for updated or additional information. Now, as an overview, in 2009, local researchers, staff of Queens County Museum, and members of the Queens County Historical Society agreed a proper tribute to those lost at sea was a priority. Summer students were tasked with researching local archival sources. A significant number of individuals were identified. In 2010, David Dagley was tasked with chairing the Lost at Sea Committee of the Queens County Historical Society. To date, approximately 1,700 names have been identified. 883 names have been accepted, 790 listed as unqualified, and 25 are unknown. The list is still much of a progress at this time. Information was exchanged with the Port Midway Lost at Sea Remembrance Service Committee, and in early 2022, the Queens County Loss of Sea Committee moved towards developing a concept and to explore fabrication and installation for a bronze monument on a concrete base. Names of those lost at sea will not be inscribed at the monument, but will be available through a digital QR code that will be made available on an interpreter panel to be located at the head of the monument. This will allow for additional information to be added quite easily, and also allow for changes. Once you have things cast in marble, it makes it a little bit tricky to correct spelling and to add new names without getting into a lot of expense. A recommended site, we looked at a couple of sites, but the recommended site that we feel will do the best is at Fort Point at the Waterfront Park. It has a waterfront location, and it has a superb ocean view, which we felt was important, given the subject matter. This existing parkland is an attraction site. It's got eye visibility, it has existing support staff during the summer months. Accessible with adjacent parking, existing site interpretation, washing facilities, a gift shop, existing hard surface walkways, picnic tables and rest areas, and some areas for shade for old folks like me to hide my head. But, so we think that really has everything that we'd be looking for in a site to make it a great place to put the monument, but also be an attraction to draw people down to that site. Now we have a site plan here. This is the proposed site. This is the Four Point Lighthouse. This is the parking lot. This is a former RCMP building. This is the walkway that goes along the waterfront. And this is really where we're proposing that the site should be, in this location, right adjacent to the ocean. This is the whole open harbor with this other way. The proposed concept will consist of four bronze figures, a fisherman, his wife, their young daughter and their son, a family unit. Your family is important in this story. Figures will be forged in bronze to full human scale. Figures will be installed on a concrete base designed to represent a work structure to be constructed on an approved site. Monument will present potential loss, but also a sense of optimism. It will evoke respect and commemoration of those lost, but also those left behind. Mood will be evident through detailed facial expressions and positioning of bronze figures. Now this is the original concept that we did for our committee meeting, and this is after we had certain discussions on what we wanted to see. So based on this approval of this concept by the committee, we moved ahead with this presentation. Here's an image of what it would look like in Fort Point. You can see the bronze figures on the base and the interpreter panel in front. And there'd be a walkway around the monument. We could also use some plantings and things like that, but that's a little later on down the road. So there's a view further back along the walkway leading back towards the lighthouse. On the left is the stone wall that separates this from the ocean. Now, this has a tree in it. This tree is actually there. We're a little concerned about the tree. It looked like if the tree wasn't there. We're just a bit concerned about the age of the tree and its general condition. Just looking back up towards the lighthouse, you can see the monument from a different perspective. The width of the foundation base will be 8 feet, be 16 feet long. It'll be 8 feet high, but 4 feet will be underground down to frost level. Consists of an 8-inch reinforced concrete top slab poured on a rough sawn framework, 8-inch thick concrete box foundation, rough sawn forms as required, 12-inch diameter concrete piles poured, site location excavated, gravel bed placed, 24-inch wide concrete footing poured, box foundation lifted and placed into unprepared footing, and the foundation will be backfilled with compacted gravel with a top slab added, so it's just not going to be an empty space. Bronze sculpted figures will be installed to the base. walkways, which are interlocking stone neighbors, I believe, and then landscaped around the base of the monument. So here's a concept sketch of how the foundation would go together. Again, this is just concept work at this point in time, but we think that this is quite functional in the long term. Now, similar projects done, the reason I got involved in this is I've done this kind of work before. So I kind of know the pitfalls and we need to be careful. The Canadian Merchant Navy Mariners Memorial consists of four full-size bronze figures representing survivors from a merchant ship sunk by a German U-boat. The raft is typical of the type carried on merchant vessels and even some corvettes as well as the Canadian Navy. The client for this project was the Engineering Department, State Grant Region Municipality. The monument is located on the waterfront on the boardwalk in Sydney, Nova Scotia. It is listed as one of the top attractions in the city. So that gives you a picture of the level of detail that we can get using bronze. The interpreter panel that you see on the right is typical of the type that we would use for the OSSC monument as well. This has a metal frame base which sits on the wooden edge. The top is all concrete. The figures are all cast in bronze. And this monument has been there for 6 years now. And the interpreter panel, which was intended to be temporary until a replacement could be provided, is still there. They decided that it lasted so well that a temporary one, they didn't need to have a bigger one, so we were happy with that. A similar project completed by our sculpture in Newfoundland, the Sealers Memorial consists of the loss of commemorates the loss of 76 sealers lost on the ice during a terrific snowstorm in 1914. Unable to locate their ship and find safety, the sailors died alone in small clusters on the ice. The monument represents a father and son who made the voyage together and died together on the ice. The position of the bronze figure is identical to how the bodies were found on the ice, with the father trying to protect his son from the storm. The monument is located in Ellis of Newfoundland, near the home from the Sea Interpreter Player. Not easy to get to, but it's worthwhile to do that way. So the most poignant thing about this is the way the bodies were found. And when they discovered the bodies on the ice after the storm, everybody that was dead was frozen in position. They couldn't do anything with them except load them onto the deck of the ship as they were found. And this is the way that the father and son were loaded onto the ship and brought back to St. John's. Based on available information, the required production and installation time for the proposed monuments is estimated at 12 months from awarding of the contract to complete the project. Based on similar projects, a budget of approximately $500,000 will be required to complete all phases of the project. Fundraising, including submission of grant applications, will commence upon receipt of formal approval from the Wage and Queens Municipality for the proposed site at Fort Jordan. And we would like to thank you, David, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to present our concept. And if there's any questions at this point in time, I guess we'd be happy to entertain.
Thank you, Don and David. I think you're really smart to do that QR code to constantly update. I think it's really wise.
But if you might have a discussion we had in our committee meetings, and it was very clear that would be the way to go.
Yeah, it's a really wise decision. Questions, comments from council? Councillor Charlton?
I just think this is incredible. Looking at these statues and the details, will be a really beautiful feature at one point.
The beauty of bronze is you can get so much fine detail mm-hmm. into the facial expressions and the hands, as we found out in the work that we've done. And bronze will last forever. The way I like to put it, if it's good enough for the people of Pompeii, it's good enough for the people of Queens County. You know, it'll last. Eventually it will turn green, but we'll all be gone by the time that happens. And very easy to clean and maintain. And we're quite comfortable. We're making great recommendations here for this one. And again, that's based on experience.
Councillor Gidney?
I think the statue adds so much to it, more than just a plaque. That is a visual thing, and it's sort of, it tugs on the heartstrings. Like it's like this is serious, sad stuff. This happened.
same feeling when I went over to Newfoundland to see the Sealers Memorial.
Yeah.
And talked to the people who had come from far and wide to actually to see this. And one of the people we met was the naval attaché for the government of Mexico, who brought his family from Ottawa. They drove crazy to get to get down to Ellison to see this monument, and they were not disappointed at all. So, you know, with bronze, you can create those facial expressions. If you know, if you see the faces on the mariners in Sydney, you know, the top guy is waving to a ship or hoping to see something, and he kind of slopes down to the next guy, and then the third guy is turned around, reach for his buddy in the water. Just the expressions on their faces, it gets people when they go down to see them.
Makes it real. Makes it real. You know, it
yes, it does.
Just that, yeah.
Councilor Brown?
I've done a lot of traveling over the years, and these are the kind of things that I really like to see when I go to other towns. And when you say about the bronze having a lot of expression, it's that expression and emotion that give you a connection to the areas that you've gone to see. It's not just reading it in a book, it's not just seeing a picture, it's actually experiencing it, and it makes you, it gives you a connection to the area. And when you bring people in, they want to learn more about the area. So I think this is a great idea.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's what happened in
yeah.
Sydney as well.
It just triggers that emotional response in people that connects you and grounds you to it.
Yeah. Well, the ability to create the facial expression, to use your figures to tell the story.
Yeah.
These figures will take on a reality of their own.
Yeah.
And really relate to visitors. Even those who haven't lost a family member or a close acquaintance at sea, it'll still make a connection with them.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Councillor Fancy?
Yeah, I think it's a great undertaking. It's, you know, even, it doesn't take much to draw, for people when they're coming to an area to look what could be here. Like, Cosby's, everybody who comes through, years ago, Cosby's has a little drawing. Now it's just loaded because people
yeah.
come through to see
yeah,
see different things. This is even more so because bronze, you can be able to even get more expression, such as the one thing I asked about here is the foundation base will be a 48-inch, no wait a second here, it's a 8-inch reinforced concrete top slab poured on rough sawn framework. Will that be in a period of time rotting out and
it'll all be concrete. We're just using the rough sawn boards for forms to pull the concrete.
Oh,
so that's
just
concrete
forms.
The texture
okay.
of the boards.
Okay, so
yeah.
that what you see there is all concrete. There's no
yeah.
there's no
yeah.
wood involved into it.
No.
Okay. And it said rough sawn. I said, oh no, what no.
I will say that in Sydney with the raft that we used for the Merchant Mariners, those rafts were typical. They were made basically they're made out of 45 or 55 gallon oil drums with boards, and that was all they were. And they were tied to the rigging of the ships, and the ships went down, they cut the ropes, and down they went. And if you get on one, you were good. If you didn't, you but we kind of had a budget issue in terms of casting everything for that monument. And when we took a look at what it was going to cost to cast the raft, we decided we would go with actual barrels and boards and rope and things like that. And it's been there now, like I said, 6 years, and everything is wearing extremely well, including the panel and stuff like that. So Sydney is very happy with that. So.
To Chairman David Dagley, so for a formal consent, and I cannot imagine why it wouldn't be given, however, our process would be at our next council meeting a discussion, and then at our first council meeting in October a recommendation. Would that fit within that is our timeline with which we work?
We're at your time frames, and we would be pleased to have your support. We'll work with it at any time.
Okay.
And today we have a letter for you, Mayor Norman, and council clarifying our request for the Fort Point Park site selection and a staff assessment on the annual leaning tree adjacent to that site, so we'll provide you with that today to give you the written request.
That'd be perfect.
And we've already done some due diligence in terms of the cost of the project. I went out to three different suppliers, one in Newfoundland who does a lot of work in the Maritimes,
mm-hmm.
and two in Ontario. Foundries, there's two of them, the foundries in China. And we worked with the foundry in China for the Sydney project. And it was, you know, the geopolitical situation these days, we're not quite sure we want to have, you know, $300,000 worth of sculpted figures sitting on a ship coming from China. The other thing is that I was able to track the ship coming across the Pacific, and every time there was a storm, I was just holding my breath, because nobody can insure, nobody will insure these things. You just take your chances. And so we went with Morgan McDonald out of Newfoundland, Bogie Bay. He has his own foundry, and to me that's very important, that the person that does the sculpture in clay also does the casting in bronze. So for us, it's just one shop that we go to and deal with. I've been over and met with him and talked to him. He showed me his facilities. And we also went around Newfoundland and looked at any number of projects that he had done. And as far as I'm concerned, from professional opinion, he's the guy that we need to do the job. And his price was rated with everybody else's. So
I foresee this as a partnership whereby the Region of Queens becomes the owner of the
I would venture so far as to commit to that being the actual intent, because it is something for the benefit of public residents, Queens in general, and the Region of Queens will be in existence long after.
Right. Yeah, but will the Historical Society be the group to which any changes go through and the updating of the QR code?
We would be intending in the Queens County Historical Society to maintain the database. And our committee member, Leslie Scott, is populating that database as we speak. We will be revising. It's a constant job. New information shows up, family, Bibles, all sources. And we're committed to working with that as time goes on.
Okay. So that's just getting ready for a discussion at our next council meeting. So will any of those questions, are there any other questions council may have that they can think of that they're going to bring forward at our next meeting that we can ask now? Any other questions that you can think of, yeah. Councillor Brown?
What kind of a time frame are you looking? I don't remember if it was in there or not, or if it just escaped.
We're looking at 12 months.
Oh, 12 months, okay.
And it's not the kind of thing that I would want to try to push down to 11 months.
No.
But you just never know how these are going to go. So if our fabricator installer, and it's the same guy, he does the fabrication and he does the installation. So I'm very comfortable with that, having done this kind of project before. I know
yeah.
the pitfalls of you get into, you have too many people involved. So when he's prepared, he'll bring over the figures and the body will be base will be prepared, and he'll do the installation and be responsible for that. This is a very low maintenance kind of figure, kind of project. So don't have to be concerned too much about every once in a while, the figure should be clean. That's a soap and water job.
Yeah. You don't want it to look like a pigeon roost.
No, no. They have to be clean.
Yeah, not like some in Italy.
Yeah, and I would like to, you know, if my figures are correct and they say we need 12 months to do this. Sometimes you get things finished earlier, sometimes you go a little bit longer, but that's really the figure goes back.
Okay.
Seeing no other questions, I thank you. And I thank you for all the work you've done to date. It's a wonderful project.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to be here to present it to yourself, Mayor Norman, and Councilor.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Mayor Norman and Councilor. Very appreciate it.
Thank you.
Social Public Libraries are going to do a presentation on their work, turning pages since 1972. Some community highlights. Thank you, David. We'll get back to you.
highlights of the recent work that we've been doing. Whether it's coming in to view an art gallery or just coming in out of the cold to browse a newspaper, there really is something for everyone. I wanted to start by showing the 9 regional library systems. This is for the last fiscal year, 2021-22. And I'm pleased to say that Sochaux Public Libraries is second only to Halifax for the average weekly open hours per location. So that includes our 4 location, our 4 physical branches and our bookmobile. And then in terms of in-person visits, we're third place. And this, despite being a pandemic year and lockdowns and people avoiding gatherings, is as if every man, woman, and child living in the area visited nearly 2 times during the year. And what do you find when you visit? Obviously, our collection supports family literacy. Whether you bring new items home or you read them at the library, numerous studies show that reading together as a family sets kids up for success in school and beyond. We also have books, toys, and crafts that encourage imagination and play, which instills a love of narrative and a lifelong association with learning. For people who, particularly those that might study or work remotely, the library is a much-needed physical space away from those distractions of home, you know, the pile of laundry to fold and so on. Our free Wi-Fi connections and computer terminals provide affordable access for those who might not otherwise be able to use those services. The chart at the top shows our open hours in the yellow bar, which of course, again, during lockdowns were restricted. And then the bars are the in-person visits, so those are beginning to rebound after coming out of the pandemic. Our library service continues to evolve in response to community needs. So as an example, there's our new bookmobile, which was a custom-built bookmobile. Launched in August of 2021, the visits and circulation for the bookmobile remain very high, especially for rural residents. We have 4 Queens County stops: Caledonia, Pleasant River, Mill Village, and Port Mattoon. After 5 years of planning and implementation, we're so pleased to launch Same Page this year. It launched in January. It is 1 library card and catalog that serves the entire 8 regional library systems, the only exception being Halifax Public Libraries, which are still on their own. But with that 1 card, you can borrow from a collection of over 1 million items from Yarmouth to Cape Breton. They'll be delivered to your local library. If you're traveling, it's great. You can borrow things while you're on vacation at the cottage and then return them to your home library. In terms of borrowing, it remains high. Again, there was a dip during the pandemic, as can be expected due to lockdowns and curbside pickup, but we are recovering and last year lent over 199,000 physical items and over 35,000 digital items to Sochaux Public Library members. In terms of our per capita expenditure, in 2 fiscal years prior, which is the last year that we have data for the whole province to compare, we here in Sochaux spent $27.84 per resident total on our expenditures. 70% of that funding is provincial, 27% municipal, and 3% self-generated. So that, as you can see, puts us on the low end of this chart. We're 4th from the bottom. On the other hand, we're once again second only to Halifax, this time in terms of per capita collection spending. So what that tells us is that we are keeping administrative and facility costs low and putting a higher percentage of that funding from the last screen back into the collection to keep it up to date. And the results are positive. We're here in 3rd place with a per capita borrowing of almost 4 items per year in the last fiscal year. So the results of keeping that collection up to date are bearing lots of fruit. In that same year, 2021, BookNet Canada showed that the average Canadian book prices were between $16 and $23, depending on what you were buying. So those 4 items would represent a borrowing value to the residents of between $63 and $89, somewhere in that range if you were to go out and buy those items instead. Some other services we're able to offer, very pleased to do so. COVID-19 rapid test distribution. I just got the numbers this morning while I was waiting, but since December of last year, we have loaned out, or given out, distributed for free, over 220,000 boxes containing 5 tests each. So that's a massive number in not even a full year. People are coming in all the time and picking those up. It's also bringing in people who might not have visited the library in a while as well. We're also providing vaccine appointment booking help, so people could call in and we would walk them through the steps of doing that throughout the pandemic. We printed proof of vaccination papers for free. Those who wanted a physical copy of their card, if they didn't have a smart smartphone to show that code when they were dining out. And we also had a program called Karen Calls, which was where staff would proactively call members in our database just simply to check in on them. And that actually won us an American Library Association International Award last year. We also have a seed library. That's just another example of the non-traditional items that you find in libraries these days. People can come in and take seeds. We ask them to, if they can, return seeds at the end of the harvest, and it just keeps it going. And lastly, just to touch on a few of our programs. In the last fiscal year, following all safe COVID protocols, we were able to offer over 1,000 in-person programs, which were attended by over 5,300 people. Just a couple examples. First, from the Liverpool Library, we had two music events since March of this year. Both were well attended and well received for bringing life back into the library. In Liverpool, Bridgewater, and Lunenburg, we had Bellhausen Supernova Camp, which was a week-long summer camp offered from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. completely free to the participants. Dalhousie camp instructors offered STEM activities, science, technology, engineering, and math, which sparked curiosity and learning for the participants, and it was especially valuable for those who might not otherwise have been able to afford a summer camp. The Liverpool Library, offers a lot of outdoor programming as well. They had paddling, hiking, and more. As well, Kathy Stitt from the Queen County Museum's local history talks are always really well received. There's a few comment cards after some of her programs. And then I have a short film that I want to show, so I'm just going to fly through the other programs, but I know that you all got the slides in your handout. We have programs for babies to encourage early literacy and battle isolation for the new parents. We had a gardening club this year, which was outdoors, which was wonderful. We had a drag queen story time, the first time partnership with Lunenburg Pride, and over 125 people attended that program last month. Mi'kmaq Moons, that would contribute to the education and awareness goals of the Truth and Reconciliation Calls to Action. We had an online teen summer book club, which was really innovative and appreciated. And this year is our 7th annual Lunenburg Lit Festival. As was noted, this is our 50th anniversary. This month, September, marks the first public, the 50 years of the first public library opened in Lunenburg in 1972. So with that, I'm just going to pull up a short video that we produced to commemorate that anniversary.
I probably started going to the library when I was about 5 or 6, so nearly 70 years ago.
Library
is a huge deal to me. People think of the library as just a place to get books, but we have so much more material than that.
It's not only about books. That's definitely an old misconception. No, we're really about everybody coming in. We are open to everyone. The library is great for seniors, but it's also fantastic for zero and up. So we start right at the bottom with babies and books. And it's really important to get that early exposure to the library, not just for literacy skills, but it's also for early socialization. But once they're early to mid-teens, then we're talking about tablets and green screen movies and 3D printing.
We really are what the community needs us to be. And that's why we've been evolving, because as those needs evolve, we evolve with it.
Libraries aren't just for kids, they're for everyone.
We want people to feel comfortable coming here. We want people to enjoy the space. People think of the library as just a place to get books, but we have so much more material than that. We do have technology courses here at the library, and one of those classes we've offered are learning how to use social media.
We want to continue to respond to their changing needs, and that's reflected in what we collect in terms of books. It's reflected in how and what we do, so the types of programs, the types of partnerships we do. We're going to work however we can to reflect what society is changing into and what they're looking for in their next interest, and we're going to help make that happen.
I think the range of people using the library has broadened from all demographics, income levels.
We've got to fashion our service to what our public want, because we are here for them. This is what the library is about.
When we moved here 20 years ago, we found that we had a book bus right here, and we've been visiting it every Thursday since, and it's been great for my wife, myself, my two girls.
We need to be there for them. We need to take on board their views. What are their opinions of us? What would they like to see here in the library?
Growing up, I've brought my kids here because it starts at a very young age with toddlers here, you know, introducing them to literature, like hearing people read.
Main intention is to teach STEM to kids, and we target kids, especially because kids are very curious people, and they have curious minds.
Libraries will always be a part of their lives because they've always saw it as a place to come and meet with people and find out information.
With Philbitty, it's of different populations in a couple of ways. We've got through collections and then also through a lot of the programming that libraries put on.
Which is quite exciting because now younger people are becoming involved in finding out information and finding out how to do different things. It's more experiential, they're learning.
So we, at Social Public Libraries, we have several ways that you can use our items or get our items without having to come to the library. For example, we have something we call deposits to all the homes for special care. We also have a service called Books by Mail. You can give us a call. You can pick the books up for yourself, or you can go online and pick them out, and we will send them to you by mail.
I've been a patron of the library for over 60 years. There's a lot more to the library. There's a lot of digital access to the library now. I order all of my books online. It's a great system. It's a wonderful, wonderful resource.
I think the library is headed wherever the world heads. So as new technology evolves, we'll get that technology, our staff will learn how to use it, and then we can teach the public how to use it.
If you haven't been into your library in a while, like maybe it was since you were in school, you don't know what you're missing. We really have got something for you. You might not know what it is.
The library is the best kept secret. It is. In 40 years, the price has never gone up.
That's the end of my presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Thank you, Ashley. I always like to tell people the library is the last free service of government.
Yes.
And it's a valuable service. Questions or comments to Ashley? Councillor Brown.
I'd like to thank Ashley. I know she's hit the ground running since she came here as CEO and head librarian, and it's great to see this presentation in place. I have to kind of question the numbers about the number of books taken out, because we had a discussion the other day at home, and since the start of COVID, I've taken out 224 books on my tablet. So I read a lot. And I've also pitched the editors twice at the Lit Fest, so it's a great experience for people. But the library is more than just books for people. It's creating books. It gives people a chance to come in, and so many of us don't have doctors now. They can go on Maple. They can use the computers there to look for jobs, look for doctors, do their appointments. It's the last totally inclusive place left around to us, so it's to me it's very important that we have libraries in whatever form they take. And I love the bookmobile, because it's a lot of people don't realize when that bookmobile was designed, it has I think 11 charging ports on it, so if we had a power outage, they could get people to have internet access in communities, charge their phones and stay connected, even in any kind of an emergency. So it's not just about going in and doing books or programs. It's community outreach.
Questions or comments? Councillor Charlton?
Understanding that we're part of the Social Public Libraries, but is there information on our individual library as far as visits? Is that information available to us?
Yeah, I could forward along some data, absolutely. I do have it broken up by libraries.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Gidney?
The comment, it was the best kept secret. And what I'm finding out with a lot of things, unless you really visit things and do look at things, you don't, they are secrets. And I like this presentation because it sort of opens our eyes to exactly what exactly is there. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
And that was one of the reasons we did produce the film. We finished last month, and we're going to launch it this month as part of the official September 50th anniversary. And again, just get that word out there, get it on social media and YouTube, and so that people, as Jeff, our deputy CEO, said, if you haven't been in a while, come in, see what there is to check out.
Any other comments? Councillor Fancy?
Yeah, my question I have is, since everything is always evolving, and the library back 20 years ago, we books are less because there's more online because people are getting online, and also too you can get ordered books. I like the features of being able to have one delivered right to your house.
Yep.
So in, as we're still in that process of considering of building a library, your book section is going to be a lot less. It's going to be more into other avenues, right?
Yeah, and that is one of the reasons I had the slide between physical and digital borrowing on here, because it the digital did go up, and I had a 5-year trend for that reason, because in the pandemic, of course, if you were closed and you were all told to stay home, right, that is the easiest way to access. But you can still see that even during the pandemic, the physical borrowing far outpaces the digital. So people do still, whether they have spotty internet at home or they just like the feel of the book in their hands, it is still going strong. And so that's not us pushing it on anyone, right? That's I always say that the retail industry says people shop with their wallet, right? But here they shop with their library card. They tell us what they want by what they order. And so as those trends shift, we're not fighting them, we're adapting to them. So if we did reach a point where the digital outpaced the physical, we would, you're right, of course, put more money into that proportionate to the demand in the community.
Can I just follow up? And because I look at it, our old library used to be an old brick building, and that kind of carried every book we needed for a small community. We had more people than we have today, and we've probably been more people who would have read books back then, because you wouldn't have had that digital aspect of it. So it's just a matter of how you proportion things to the weight of books.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
What you're going to require, what you're going to have on hand.
Yeah. I'll extend an invitation to anyone who's interested. Our technical services headquarters is located on the ground floor of the LCLC in Bridgewater. If you want, let me know. Come have a tour, just a 20-30 minute tour around the time that the mail arrives, because it's you know, the book carts that they push, it's usually 3 to 4 book carts full, all levels of these black mailer bags that we're using to send books throughout the province every single day. The mail is delivered twice a day. And so, again, that's people saying, oh, I want this book from Sydney, and I want this book from the Valley, and then they're bringing them in. Those books might also be available digitally, but they're choosing. And not just books, there's, you know, magazines and movies and so on too, but our public saying, no, I want this book. And that was one of the advantages of St. Page too, is that now, you know, we will buy the books that are most in demand here, but we don't, like you said, need to buy every single book. People are finding that things from even in Cape Breton are arriving in 2, 3, maybe 4 days in using the St. Page catalog. So we would, if and when things change, we will adapt to that change, but currently people are still really borrowing the slides.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I thank you, Ashley. Happy 50th anniversary to Social Shore Public Library. And I think it's really interesting that people, you know, between this and books, readers still like books.
Yeah, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of evidence. The blue light from the phone keeps you awake at night, right? Like the lying down or curling up with a book, there's still something to it. Yeah. Thank you.
Something about the smell of cracking a fresh book.
New book smell,
yeah. Thanks, Ashley.
Are there any petitions to table today? Public question comment session. If there is anyone who wishes to address council, please remember to state your name, your civic address, and you have a 5-minute maximum. No, it has not.
It has been.
No.
Okay. Well, maybe we should expect that.
members wish to speak? No? Approval of the minutes, regular council, August 9th, 2022. Moved by Councilor Hawk, seconded by Councilor Gidney. Any questions or comments? Not, all those in favor? 7.1, road renaming. So Mike McLeod, Director of Planning and Development, we discussed this at our last meeting in a discussion. Everything fits the order as required. There is a motion in the package. If someone would like to make that motion, Councilor Charlton.
I move that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality approve the naming of an existing right-of-way off Highway 331 in East Port Dunwoody as Cahoon Lane.
And then seconded by Councilor Romero. Mr. McLeod, anything further to add to this?
No, Mayor Norman, I guess it is in compliance with our naming and renaming of the streets policy, so yeah, so the name of the name is the planning department.
Any questions of Mr. McLeod? Hearing none, I'll ask the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Again, to Mr. McLeod, fees for planning service with discussion we had. And the point is, these are not increases to make money. They're just basically increases to cover costs. And in some places, I would add, they're probably not covering costs. However, there is a motion within the package. Some Councilor Romero.
I move the Council of Region of Queens Municipality approve operational policy number 7, fees for planning services.
And then seconded by Councilor Charlton. Mr. McLeod.
Yeah, just a further, I guess the current policy was approved back in 2011, so it has been a substantial amount of time since that policy was reviewed. As you had indicated, costs have certainly increased over the years, particularly in the areas of bylaw amendments and development agreements, that the primary cost of those services is through advertising, and those costs have certainly increased significantly. So as you say, it's not a revenue-generating policy, but just to offset some of the costs of providing those services. So the change is certainly necessary.
Any questions respecting changes of fees? If not, I'll ask for the question. All those in favor?